This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You've caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, hell, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
And how do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Here's Hal.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
Well, hello, this is Hal.
And Melanie.
And we want to welcome you to Making Biblical Family Life Practical. This is our weekend edition. Well, no, it's not. We're just I'm stumbling over myself because we're on the road. We're on the way back from our conference at the Florida Parent Educators Association down in Orlando, Florida, and we are tired.
It was wonderful, though. It was such a great conference. Loved being down there. And we're going to be back in Florida in Tampa in January.
That's right. We've got a few other dates to tell you about in a little while. But what we wanted to talk about in this week's episode is coming of age. Now, we had Israel Wayne on the show recently to talk about the transition to adulthood. And one of the things that we do as part of our own family's recognition of this process is a formal coming of age ceremony.
Because, you know, it's important to set out expectations for our children. You know, the world has very low expectations for teens. Teens are expected to be hormonal slackers.
Mm-hmm.
But many times, conservative Christians also have low expectations of a different kind.
That's right. And so what we have tried to do, what we found very helpful, is to kind of draw a line, to put a peg in the ground, as they say, and say, all right, son, and soon we hope that we'll be doing this with our daughters too, say, child, we are starting from this time forward, we're going to think of you as a young man or as a young woman and not as one of the little children, you know, not one of the kids. And that means not only that we're going to try to give you a different kind of respect, but we have different expectations of you too.
That's right. Now, let's talk just a minute, though, about what kind of expectations are reasonable for that age range.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think what people don't get is that, you know, an 11-year-old needs a benevolent dictator.
Right.
They need somebody to tell them what to do because they don't have a whole lot of sense.
Right. Well, and that's right. I mean, that's part of the parenting process.
That's part of the parenting process is making that transition from benevolent dictator
to being a trusted advisor.
Trusted advisor, because that's what a 19-year-old needs. They need somebody who can give them good advice,
right,
not somebody to tell them what to do.
Right, precisely that. So what we're going to be doing with that, here, are you looking for this right here? Is this what you need? Right,
yeah,
there.
Keep going.
Okay, sure. All right. So, you know, as we look at the biblical model, you know, and we talked about this some a couple of weeks ago with Israel, you know, that there's definitely a time of youth. You know, when you go from being a child to being an adult, there's definitely a time that's called youth in Scripture. But the examples that we see over and over in the Old Testament and the New Testament is that youth is really a period in the young adult life. It's a time of increased mentorship and, you know, still the discipling and the guidance, but no longer the directive sort of thing.
Well, you know, youth in Scripture is something from like 12 or 13 to 30, where you've got people married, kings like Solomon,
mm-hmm.
you know, people, men of war, like remember Goliath, it said he was a man of war from his youth.
Right.
But David was despised because he was only a youth.
Right. And so, I mean, yeah, so there's both aspects of it. There's that acknowledgement that a young adult is not finished in his training. He's not entirely mature, and yet we can give them that expectation and encourage them to reach forward for that and to be striving forward, leaning into it, if you will.
But that's countercultural.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our culture really doesn't support that.
Right.
And we've got all these laws to make sure you can only get a certain kind of job before you're 16 or even 18. You know, the culture doesn't really support kids. You know, I know in our town, if a 12-year-old rode their bike all over the town like I did when I was 12,
mm-hmm.
somebody would call social services.
Right. And so we've got to do some things that are going to be a little countercultural, I think, to try to get that expectation set and to, you know, to be a testimony not only to our kids but to the extended family, to the community at large, to our churches, to say, hey, We expect more from this young person, from this young man or young woman, and we want you to expect more from them and help us hold them accountable and help us in the process of training them and transitioning them over.
And, you know, I think that a coming-of-age ceremony is something that nearly all cultures have had.
Right.
But, you know, ours kind of lost that somewhere along the way.
Yeah, they did. They did. And so let's talk a little bit about where those come from. You know, I think the one that we may be most familiar with in the Western world is the Jewish bar mitzvah. You know, the idea that the bar mitzvah means a son of the law, that at a certain age, a young Jewish boy is considered to become accountable for his own obedience to God's law and commandment, and supposed to see himself now as a student and a disciple of the law. And that typically happens at the age of 12 or 13. You know, if you're in a part of the country where this is more common, you may have seen this, that it's a very big event in the life of a traditional Jewish family. They also have a similar event for their daughters called a bat mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a friend of ours who's got older children than ours had been talking about this, and he shared that they wanted to do the same kind of thing, but recognized that as Christians, we're no longer under law, we're under grace. You know, that we need to be thinking in terms of our love and obedience to Christ as recipients of his grace, not just as those who are held to the obedience of the Mosaic law. And so they called their ceremony a bar shanon, which means a son of grace. And of course, it would be a bat shanon for their daughter.
And, you know, this is not something commanded in Scripture.
No.
And so please don't think, you know, we're putting an expectation on you.
No.
It's just that we found that this is a convenient way, a mm-hmm. positive way
yeah.
to mark this transition in our children's lives so they understand we want to see them as growing up. We want to celebrate that with them.
Right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about how we do that, okay?
Well, you know, I think that for our children, mm-hmm. this marks that transition to adulthood as something to celebrate. To say, you know, it's a good thing that you're no longer a boy, mm-hmm. you're a young man. It's a good thing that you're no longer a girl, you're a young woman.
And we've done five of these now with our sons as they've reached the age of 13 in our case. That's what the date that we picked, just sort of arbitrarily.
Well, you know, I think because we looked at our 12-year-olds and they weren't really serious enough yet.
Right.
They hadn't seen any physical changes themselves. It was hard for them to imagine that they were really on that threshold.
True.
And, you know, so traditionally it's been done at 12 or 13. We've chosen 13. It,
mm-hmm.
You know, we have friends who've done it at 16, 17, even 18.
Right.
I think it's just important that you mark the transition somehow.
Right. You know, one advantage with the 13 age, too, is that, you know, our society makes a big deal about being a teenager. And so when you go from being a 12-year-old to being a 13, then sometimes people make a big deal about, oh, now you're a teen. And so when we come in and say, yeah, we're going to make a big deal about it, but it's not for that reason.
It's a positive reason.
It's a positive reason.
Because the way the world portrays the teen years is like all of the freedom, even adult freedom to sin and wreck your life,
mm-hmm.
but none of the responsibility.
Yeah. So anyway, so you know, most of them have been quite excited about this. They look forward to it. They anticipate it for a long time.
Oh, yeah. They plan it and think about it and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
One or two of ours have been less excited. Not we. We talk to people frequently who say their children say, I'm not ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to grow up. Well, what do you do then?
Well, you know what? I think we do need to challenge them on that to say, you know, you are getting older. You do need to become more mature. And you can't be a child forever. Peter Pan is not part of our theology.
And to use one of these offensively made up words,
yeah.
I think we can incentivize it.
Mm.
You know, I think okay. we can have certain privileges that you only get when you reach this stage.
Yeah, and some of those, we have done a little bit of that just to make a distinction for the sake of the younger siblings more than anything. You know, to say, okay, those who are on the young adult side can have a later bedtime. They're going to be included in some things that maybe you younger ones are not going to be included in.
Well, in our house, you can't drink coffee till you're 13.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, that's a big thing because most of the older guys like to drink coffee, and so does Dad. And the younger ones want to join in the fun. So, can I have something? No, you can't, because you're not old enough yet. And that's arbitrary. Of course, the other thing is you don't want a highly caffeinated 8-year-old. That's a dangerous thing.
No, that would be a dangerous thing. So I think a highly caffeinated 11-year-old would be even worse.
Mercy, yes. Some other things, we have friends who go to a more formal church than we do, and they made an expectation in their home. You had to be a young man before you were allowed to wear a necktie to church. You know, and I remember growing up thinking that necktie was just an awful thing, that it was forced on me. But in their family, it was a mark of distinction. If you were a grown-up, you got to wear a tie.
Well, yeah, there was a time in our country that you had to be a certain age to wear long pants.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that's a typical thing. Goes back to the UK. I think that's still somewhat of an expectation in Britain. So, you know, all of those things, are those significant? Not really. They're arbitrary, but they're little markers, and they mean a lot to the young people that are impacted by them.
And the reason that's important is because as they realize, hey, I'm becoming an adult, this is a good thing. You know, it's a good thing to grow up and to experience being an adult. It makes a point, and having an event like this makes a real point with our son or daughter, with their siblings, with the others around them, and in their church and family, that, you know what, you can expect a little bit more of them now.
Right. Okay. Well, so let's talk about this. We're going to talk about the ceremonies. We've been talking about the why, but let's talk about the what.
Okay.
Let's talk about what kind of stuff we do. Well, I guess the first thing is to let people know we're going to do it.
Well, yeah, we send out usually electronic invitations, but they're pretty fancy. You know, I'll read you one of ours. It says, Mr. and Mrs. W. Harold Young III request the honor of your presence at the Bar Hanon ceremony of their son, Matthew Henry Young, at 4 in the afternoon on his 13th birthday. And it tells the place and the time and everything. The favor of a reply is requested.
Yeah, and if you want example verbiage, go get your Emily post, or, you know, go look for formal wedding invitations or any kind of event announcement like that.
And some of them have been very classic in appearance. Mm-hmm. On one, I used an old painting of the cavalry.
Mm-hmm.
Another one for a son who loves raptors had a beautiful photograph of a golden eagle and had that verse in Isaiah. That those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength and shall mount up with wings like eagles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we varied a little bit to the child, but we send out invitations, and we send out at the same time an explanation of what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, that what we're trying to accomplish, that we will mark this transition to adulthood and exactly how it's all going to work so that people understand before they show up what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is... we're going to talk a little bit more about the content, but I guess we do need to say one of the reasons this is so anticipated is that this is the biggest party that our family does.
Well, with a lot of children, we have 8 children. Yeah. I didn't want to have big birthday celebrations that people would resent coming to.
Yeah, when you're doing 8 a year, that seems like, gosh, another birthday at the Young's house. That's going to be kind of tough. But
instead, we do a very fun family celebration. Maybe we should do a show on birthday celebrations. That would be fun.
That would be fun. We could do that.
But this is the biggest one we do. We plan for it for years. Mm-hmm. Now, our son and one day our daughters chooses the venue, you know, where we're going to have it within reason.
With some guidance.
Yeah.
But
what kind of entertainment there's going to be, what kind of food there's going to be. And we've had everything in the world.
Oh, literally.
Yeah. We had one of our sons had a hymn sing with a fancy dessert buffet.
Yeah.
Another one had a turkey shoot with an outside cookout and picnic. Real range.
The most recent one.
You know what? These people probably don't know what a turkey shoot is.
Okay. Did you ever see the old Sergeant York movie? Okay. The idea is it's an old frontier sport where they would restrain a turkey down range, you know, maybe a couple dozen yards away from the shooters. And then they would take turns trying to shoot the turkey.
When it poked its little pea brain up above the log.
Right. And whoever actually killed the turkey then would get to keep the turkey. Well,
take it home and eat it.
Right.
Well, we don't do that.
We don't do that. We gave a gift card for Walmart in the value that a frozen turkey cost. But
they shot targets.
They shot targets. But, you know, it's an old Southern sport, an old frontier thing, and one of our sons just wanted to do that. You know, our most recent one, our most recent son to go through this had looked around at church, and I guess he was thinking, what do the young adults in our church do every weekend. You know, after church, they change clothes and they go out on the playground and they play Ultimate Frisbee. And he decided he wanted the biggest Ultimate Frisbee game that could be possibly organized.
He sure did. He probably had 50 people out on the field.
So we had his Bar Chanel was held in a city park. We reserved the picnic shelter, and the park had like four or five soccer fields adjoining it, and they put those young people out there and just covered that whole soccer complex.
Now, Hal, we are running late. We need to stop for a break. Let's tell them about A Cry from Egypt, and we'll give them the great news after that.
Okay, that's good. Well, stand by. We're going to, for a word from our sponsor, which is Great Waters Press.
Jera was a slave in Egypt. It was a dangerous place to be. The work was exhausting, and her family was torn between the gods of the Egyptians and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And her brother, would his Ada be given in marriage to an Egyptian in the palace? Would they ever be free? Adventure, excitement, love, and faith come together when Jera and her family find themselves at the culmination of 400 years of history in A Cry from Egypt, the historical novel by Hope Auer, selected by David Quine's Cornerstone Curriculum and the Tapestry of Grace program, endorsed by Rob Shearer of the Schaefer Study Center. Order your copy from the website, acryfromegypt.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with
Hal
and Melanie.
Yep.
And we want to tell you something special about A Cry from Egypt. It just won Christian Small Publishers Book of the Year. What an outstanding honor for a brand new author like Hope. And just this week, we received copies of the Advanced Reader Edition of A Stand at Sinai, the sequel. And I know many of you are dying to read it because everywhere we go, people ask us, is Hope's new book out? It's out. Head over to our site, raisingrealmen.com/acryfromegypt, or Hope's site, acryfromegypt.com, and check out the sequel and the award-winning A Cry from Egypt.
Very good. All right. Well, we've been talking about coming-of-age ceremonies, and the way we've done it with our sons, we've gone through 5 coming-of-age processes with each of them. A total of 5, 1 per, okay? I'm still in my post-conference jet lag, but at any rate.
Honestly, my brain's not working right.
Seriously.
Well, yeah, one thing that we do that's a little bit different, a lot of people that do this have it be a men's-only ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And we chose not to do that. We chose to include whole families because we thought it was important that it be a witness to the whole family. And, you know, if you choose differently, that's fine, but that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
We invite whole families, but let's get to the meat of it. What is it that we do? Because this is important.
This is the important thing. You know, the celebration, the venue, the entertainment, the food and all that is really secondary because the purpose for doing this is to welcome this young person into the adulthood track, if you will. You know, we take the approach that we're going to make a transition, a very intentional transition from childhood to adulthood without putting them into this long holding pattern we call the youth group or the teenage years or whatever. And so the way that we do this is not about the party, but it's rather about the recognition and the charge, if you will, the challenge that we give them at this time.
And so what we do is we invite significant men for our boys in their lives to come and share with them, what do you wish you had known when you were this age?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what advice would you give to a young man just starting out on the road to manhood? And it has been fascinating to hear the advice. We encourage them to bring sometimes an object lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you remember I remember one that we did at someone else's coming of age.
Right.
Where you gave them a pair of binoculars. Can you tell me
about
that?
Right, because the point I wanted to make was that a man should be visionary. He should be looking ahead to see what's over the horizon, to see what's coming up, so that he can make plans for his family, for himself. but realizing that you cannot really see the future from where you are, you need to find someone who can tell you what's ahead. So just like you would look ahead out on the horizon physically using a pair of binoculars, well, when you're looking ahead in time, you need to find somebody with experience who has a wisdom that can say, now this is the path that I took, this is what worked, this is what you need to avoid.
And that has been really neat. The people we look to are older male relatives in the family, parents of their friends, mm-hmm. elders in the church, leaders in the community that they know. But we also, there's some women we invite too, like our mothers, you know, their grandmothers. Mm-hmm. Their grandfathers aren't here anymore. They're in
right.
heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And so we invite their grandmothers as representatives of that generation mm-hmm. to come and share too. And they have shared some wonderful things.
Yes, they have. Now, I'll tell you, there's one thing. Some of you may be saying, well, you know, you said this was going to be something countercultural. And so you just don't understand. My extended family just doesn't get this. They are not people who are spiritually oriented or believers of anything. You can come up with all kinds of fears and objections. Won't they distract from the seriousness of this event?
And, you know, our experience has been very positive.
Yes.
We have just invited the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that can't come, we invite them to send letters to be read there.
Mm-hmm.
And we just make sure that they understand how serious this is to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have a family that you're not sure they might be like-minded, I'd put them later in the program so they can see how serious this is.
Right, because once...
So they get the tone.
Once some of the people who are, you know, close to you, maybe in your church or, you know, those who are on board with the intent of this, once they have made some of their presentations, then the people that come in later will say, oh, that's the tone that I need to hit. And so that, you know, that's an easy way of kind of sliding into it. But this is the neat thing. We found that even people that we had some...
And we didn't expect would
right,
be an agreement.
We weren't sure how they were going to take this. They came in with some fantastic advice. Because you know what? You know, an older man has got experience. He can do exactly what the visionary thing to say, hey, when I was your age, I wish I knew this. Or this is what I discovered soon after I got past the age you're at now. So watch out for it. You know, and we've had great advice about you know, living in healthy lifestyles, about financial management.
About business.
About integrity. I mean, all kinds of good advice. So don't be afraid of including anybody that's in your circle that might otherwise be included in a family event.
Because, you know, it's been fantastic. I think it's drawn our family together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we have yeah. seen some of those family members that we didn't think would be in agreement go to great lengths to come. It's been really neat to see it.
Now, one thing I found interesting, too, is not only do we get the elder members of the family, but we've gotten some of the younger members of the family involved, and it's been a blessing as well.
Like, even their older siblings, who may just be a couple of years older than they are, mm-hmm. but they've been through it, they've got a couple of years under their belt, we invite them to speak, too. I'd like to read you a short excerpt from what one of our older brothers told our most recent young man to get through this.
Okay.
He said, instead of just sharing a few things I've learned over the last couple of years, I would like to challenge you to every day dig deeper into what it means to be a real man, a Christian man in our culture. People try to tell us our teen years are for fun, that they're for ourselves, the time to game, the time to play, and that really they don't count. These are utter lies. God gave us each the time to grow, to dig deep in the Bible, to develop a deep and personal relationship with our Creator. And this is something that so many people miss.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's good advice coming from a 16-year-old.
That's tremendous advice. And see, he's only got 2 or 3 years of experience himself, but he's got enough that he can share. And so that, again, that reinforces to them, you are a responsible young man, and you need to be learning and growing and be able to bring along those who are you know, at lesser age than yourself.
You know, I've been to events like this that were for girls.
Now, tell me about that. I've never been to one of those.
You know, I went to one. It stands out in my memory. They had a formal tea. It was very beautiful. And they asked women of significance to speak, and they asked me to speak, as well as the fathers and grandfathers, you know, just the same as we do. And, you know, I remember what I did is I gave her a copy of the of Maria von Trapp's biography.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her that I would, if I could go back to that time, that I wish I could tell myself to be more content in whatever circumstances I was in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Maria von Trapp lived in a castle, and she was a war refugee with nothing. But she was still the nurturing, kind mother that held the family together.
mm-hmm.
and made her children happy, whether she had a whole staff of servants or whether she didn't know where their next meal was coming from.
Mm.
And so we can, it's the same idea, it just looks a little bit different because of who you're speaking to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So all of those things, you know, those all play into it. Now, I see we've just got a few minutes left here. What do we need to wrap up here with?
Let's wrap up by saying
mm-hmm.
this is not required.
No.
But it's useful. Because we have seen a tremendous change in our voice once they have done this. Because mm-hmm. it's like it drives it home to them that the future is coming. That they're men, mm-hmm. they're going to have to stand on their own.
Right.
They have to support a family. And, you know, I think about one of our most recent ones that went through this,
mm-hmm.
who was so scatterbrained beforehand that I really thought, I don't even know if this is appropriate at this age. Maybe we should wait another year.
Mm-hmm.
And then after he went through this, it's just like he totally sobered up. Before, he was taking 3 hours a day to do math. Not long after that, I don't know if you remember now,
mm-hmm.
he asked me, do you mind if I get up really early in the morning, like 6 or 6:30?
Right.
And I said, why?
Because, yeah.
you know, he wasn't very trustworthy at that time.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I was just realizing I could probably do my chores and my schoolwork faster if I got up earlier before there were any distractions. I said, go for it, baby.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been doing it for months.
That's right. That is right. And we've seen that more than once. And I think that's it, you know. The real expedient thing about this is that all of us really are getting together on that central concept that, hey, you've been a child up to this point, but we want you to begin thinking of yourself as something more than one of the little kids, more than one who's totally dependent, who has to be directed and pushed and prodded, but rather to take on the role of an adult, to start to think, you know, what do I need to be doing in the future? How do I need to be acting as a responsible man or as a responsible woman? And begin to train yourself, even as we begin to move back from the directive side and become more an advisor, more of a counselor to you.
Now, I want to address for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people hear those things and they think, but where's the fun? Are they no longer allowed to have fun? You know what? We have a pile of fun. We have tons of fun.
Don't grown-ups have fun, too?
We do.
So. Yeah.
It's a great adventure. And I think
yes.
we need to paint adulthood to our children
mm-hmm.
instead of time to buckle down and get in harness.
Yeah.
As this is the opening of a bigger adventure where you don't need as much protection or guidance, but
mm-hmm.
you're going to be out there doing amazing things on your own.
That is right. Well, we hope that's useful to you. Now, let's talk about a few other amazing things. We are going to be in Hartford, Connecticut in
yes.
a couple of weeks. Okay.
Yes, we're going to be in Hartford, Connecticut, and then we're going to be in Dallas at the Teaching Diligently Convention in Dallas later
right.
in June.
That is
what
right.
are those dates we're going to be in Hartford
okay.
now?
Okay, we are going to be in Hartford on Saturday, June the 14th. Okay, this is an event sponsored by TEACH, which is the State Homeschool Organization in Connecticut. It's the Education Association of Christian Homeschools, I think. And
we'll be there, and Carol Barnier will be there. And, hey, if you are listening to this and you're in that area, we would love to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
Come on over and let's get to know one another.
That's right. And then a couple of weeks after that, we're going to be at Teach Them Diligently in Dallas. That's going to be Thursday, June the 26th through Saturday the 28th. And that is a new venue for Teach Them Diligently, but I expect it's going to be great.
Yes, I am looking forward to it.
We are really looking forward to it.
This will be our first time speaking live in Texas.
Yes, it is.
It's one of the few states we have not spoken live in.
Mm-hmm. And so we appreciate it if you can come by and stop by your booth. If you heard about us on the podcast here, then let us know. Just come by and say so. We would love to meet you and love to hear from you.
Please join us on the web at RaisingRealMen.com. You can find out more about our speaking at HalAndMelanie.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on Facebook at Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen,
mm-hmm.
Facebook.com/HalAndMelanie. And basically, everywhere on social media /RaisingRealMen.
That's right. So until next time, this is Hal Young.
And Melanie Young.
Thank you for listening.
See you later, folks.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HalAndMelanie.com, or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/RaisingRealMen. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.